Door Number 8 by Francis Rosenfeld. Door Number 6. Soul Journeying. Are you sure you are ready for this? It may be a little unsettling, he asked. As sure as I'll ever be, Taylor answered, doubtful. She hadn't slept well the night before, well, with the sea lion visiting, and whatnot, and was a little concerned about the extra preparation required for this door. What is it this time? She tried to anticipate her challenge. Just remember, whatever you see or feel, it's all in your mind. You are perfectly safe and you can leave any time if it gets to be too much. That being said, here goes. He got up to open the door. The wall of water flooded the room, so fast Taylor didn't even have a chance to react to the prospect of imminent drowning. They both got swept by it, despite their best efforts, and carried away in a white water stream that rushed violently between large boulders, where they struggled to keep from getting pulled under, grasping at anything they could get their hands on. Taylor wanted to speak, but her voice didn't carry over the deafening roar of the stream. For a second she fell suspended into a quasi-imponderable state, where all of her being was freed from any pulls or pressures, and then tumbled into the void at great speed, almost gliding over the surface of a tall waterfall whose bottom got lost in the mist. She wanted to be scared, every rational thought told her she should be scared, but she couldn't feel fear at all, as it turns out it is the emotion itself, and not the thought behind it that really matters. She kept falling, dazzled by the surreal beauty of her surroundings, melting into a million drops of water, becoming the stream itself, its wild rush, its jump over the rocky edge, and the mist at its bottom. "Are you okay?" her guide asked, reminding her that she was not alone, and, since there was nothing to contradict that, he must have been part of the stream, the rapids, and the jump over the rocky edge too. She didn't know how to feel about sharing what seemed to be her very essence with another person, other than to be intensely uncomfortable. "I'll have to say," her guide commented on her misgivings, trying to stay afloat, "that under the circumstances, the two of us being cut from the same fabric, so to speak, should be the last thing for you to worry about." She didn't have a chance to reply because her liquid self got engulfed by the mist and splattered with great noise in the pool at the bottom of the waterfall. "What is happening?" She gaped in disbelief at the sun rays that were casting rainbows in her mist. Discrete bits of light refracted in her water droplets. "You are water," he commented on Taylor's latest new normal. There really was no point in trying to find continuity in this pulp fiction of a life. She found herself feeling really grateful that the sun was still coming up each morning. "Why?" she asked anyway, and was startled to hear the sound of her own voice echoed by the waterfall. The question reverberated for a while, bouncing off the rocky cliffs that surrounded the lake, and was replicated by the tiny water droplets of the mist before it subsided. "I don't know, it's your journey, it must mean something to you," he replied, preoccupied. She looked around at the pieces of herself, now fluid, she could feel all of them, wherever they were, in the mist, in the tranquil pool at the bottom of the waterfall, in the rush of the white water stream, in the distant shape of the clouds. "Can I move any of this?" she asked, captivated by the swirling of the mist, not knowing how to react to the fact that she seemed to exist now in a different state of being, no longer human, no longer a living thing even, just water. "I would assume so, it is your body after all," he postulated, with no proof. The thicket of the mist which had formed at the bottom of the waterfall dissipated and condensed a few feet away into a soft rain. "I can't believe this," she gasped, in utter willful manipulation of matter. "Remember, whatever you see here is no more than a message for your journey, you have to understand what it's trying to tell you," he reminded her. "But this is the journey," she protested. "No. This is an exploration of your consciousness. Your life is the journey," he corrected her. "So, what does it mean? That I'm going to endlessly recycle myself?" She tried to grasp the metaphor. "And yield to the circumstances you find yourself in, and be all over the place, if we were to approach this in a critical way. But this is not what I see," he commented. "What do you see?" "Transformation, intent, maybe," he hesitated. "What do you see?" "I can, will, fog. So very cool," Taylor blabbed, overexcited. "Oh," he protested the entertainment value of the experience, which was definitely not the point of their visit. "Cool is so uninspired. Keep looking for why you are here, you'll know it when you find it. It's not supposed to be cool. It just is. Is what? Taylor asked, distracted by a series of waves she was making, which she tried to keep as even as possible. Would you stop that? He snapped, irritated. I swear you guys are getting younger and younger each semester. I'll be teaching this class to kindergartners soon. If this water were your body, which it is, at this point in time, would you flop your arms uncontrollably like that? Stop fidgeting. I never thought of it that way. She settled down, and the water of her lake turned perfectly still. Maybe that's why you are here, to learn to be still, he suggested. Taylor remembered the sea lion's perfect comfort with its environment, and the way it seemed to be smiling at her from behind the flat boundary of the image it was inhabiting. Her day-to-day activities around campus suddenly stopped enjoying their privileged status associated with being real. After they had moved out of the present, out of the world of the senses, and into the realm of memories, all her experiences, real or imagined, were nothing more than thoughts in her head, and as such, equal from a cognitive perspective. None of them were truly real. Oh, you're wrong about that, your thoughts are very real. We are here, aren't we? Her guide replied. Here? There is no here? She retorted, only to regret her comment a moment later, out of fear that whatever this was that surrounded her was going to disappear and leave nothing in its place. The lake shimmered gently in the sunlight, and then its surface regained its mirror gloss. Still here, he commented. A very stable environment. You must have given this a lot of thought. I haven't given it any thought at all. What sane person fantasizes about being a lake? This is the first time I'm seeing this in my life. That you remember. He paused to give her a second to ponder the possibility. What do you suggest that, I had my memory erased, or something? It was really hard to be argumentative while her essence was dispersed all over creation in fluid form. Oh, that is an absolute certainty. All of our memories get constantly overwritten. Try to pay attention to the details around you. The night had fallen, with clear and starry skies, very bright in the light of a giant moon, which looked almost too large to maintain the illusion of reality. Flocks of large white birds flew overhead, seagulls, or storks, or cranes, maybe, and Taylor's rational mind flagged them as unrealistic, because none of those birds flew at night, while simultaneously trying to assess what species they belonged to. She didn't notice that an eddy was forming at the center of the lake. The whirlpool grew larger and faster as it accumulated more water. Never mind, I think it's time to leave, her guide said, a fraction of a second before the now giant vortex pulled her down with great force and dropped her in her chintz chair. She was almost surprised to see that the door room was dry. He wasn't there, but the door back to her room was open. For a moment she worried that he may be drowned in the whirlpool or got lost during transport. She then dismissed the thought as idiotic, only to immediately reassess the possibility that her mind could, in fact, be a giant death trap. After all, nothing was impossible, right? She got up cautiously, making sure the floor was solid, careful not to see through it on whoever happened to be in the room below at the time, and went back to her room, where a mountain of homework was waiting. Oh, thank God. I was really worried you might be dead. Taylor breathed a deep sigh of relief at the sight of her neighbor. He was sitting at the large table in the middle of the reading room, half buried in a book. Why would I be dead? He asked, genuinely surprised. Taylor shook her head to chase away the silliness of the comment. It has been known to happen, he commented, reverting the conversation back to worry. Hence the preparation. I thought the preparation was for me, Taylor blurted, shocked. The preparation was also for you, he replied. The laconic conversation had started to irritate Taylor, especially since the experiment seemed to have entailed a lot more risk than she was comfortable taking. His eyes met her belligerent gaze, and he felt compelled to explain. You know, sometimes an experienced swimmer rushes to the rescue of a person who has ventured out in deep waters without knowing how to swim. The experienced swimmer is so confident in his abilities that he underestimates the strength with which a person who believes is drowning will hold on to him as their last hope. The drowning person often struggles, doing the exact opposite of what will keep them afloat, and can drag the experienced swimmer under. It turns out instinctive reactions are not always your best hope for survival, huh? He turned towards her to see if the drowning person analogy had fallen a bit harsh. The sad part is that it would be almost effortless for the experienced swimmer to pull the drowning person to safety if they calm down enough to keep their heads above water. Bodies naturally float, and all it takes is for the person to do nothing, but it never happens because everyone believes acting out is the only way out of a crisis. He looked at Taylor, whose eyes had started to be overshadowed by concern, and answered quickly, to nip any potential guilt in the bud. "We undergo extensive training for situations just like this, they are to be expected. The problem is, you never know what you're going to encounter, hell or high water, so to speak. Nobody can anticipate every possibility. I once traveled with a girl whose hidden emotions were trapped by the lava flows of an active volcano, with no way out." "What happened to her?" Taylor asked, worried. "That is not your life," he retorted, surprisingly stern. "You don't have the rights to its details." "Then don't give them to me, geez," Taylor thought, trying to think up a change of subject. "The point of this experience, fraught with risk as it may have been," he gave her a morose stare, "was to realize that whether you acknowledge your emotions or not, they're still a part of you, and they will mold your life. The emotions that stay hidden, by their very nature, usually create chaos and damage. It isn't that difficult to understand why that would happen. People don't normally lock up and throw away the key to a place where they keep things they are proud of. That's why I'm still a little puzzled by that beautiful world of yours. I'm trying to figure out why you would bury a place like that. Sure, the white waters are a bit out of control, but what we found there was a treasure, not a dump heap. Care to explain?" "As I mentioned before, I have never seen that place in my life, in my mind or otherwise." Taylor frowned, embarrassed to have her mind turned inside out for public viewing. "You don't have any thoughts or feelings about it?" he probed. "I don't know, it's nice, I guess," she conceded. "Then why do you keep it hidden?" he pressed on. "Not everything that's hidden is bad," she tried to circumvent the question, managing only to incite more curiosity. "You know, this is an outrageous invasion of privacy. So much for having the rights to one's life details. Apparently that only applies to other people." "Please don't be upset, I don't mean to pry. I just find it disconcerting, that's all." Taylor didn't want to tell him that, much like with her obsessive need to have everything in her environment just so, she needed to have a place inside her head that was all her own, where nobody else could make decisions for her or judge her, a place where she could just be, unconstrained. She had built this imaginary place inside her mind, a shelter against the whims of the world, at the age of 13. She never knew what it looked like, but it was home, and having it broken into and exposed to the world felt like a slow death. She was saddened by its loss and needed to mourn it, even though it felt weird to cry because an imaginary world no longer existed. Despite the common sense she prided herself having in crisis situations, and her just-the-facts approach to life in general, and after all the things that had happened to her in this multi-doored adventure, it was this breach of boundaries that hit her the worst, and marked a critical point she was certain she wasn't going to recover from, not the way she was before, anyway. Her old life was gone. "I'm really sorry." He started to panic, suddenly aware of her shock at the unraveling of this place in her mind that had been a part of her for so long. "I just never met a person who lived an entire life inside her head, I didn't even know it was even possible." "That's a good thing to add to your instructor's training manual, then," Taylor thought, too distraught to reply. "You know, you can make yourself another inner world, and I won't know anything about that one." He lied, trying to figure out if there was any way to salvage this wreck. "Thanks. Pass," she replied inside her head, not seeing a reason to make the effort to speak out loud. From this moment forward she knew she was never going to be able to have a single thought all to herself again. "I feel terrible, like I kick you out of your home, or something," he mumbled, in a way so awkward it showed complete lack of familiarity with apologizing. "You didn't kick me out of my home, you kicked me out of my world," Taylor thought. She got up to leave, trying to put together an action plan for how to move forward, now that her inner shelter was no more. "I was just trying to give you a mirror, so you can see yourself. None of us can see what is so obvious to the people around us, we keep ourselves in the blind spot. Don't you want to know?" he insisted, trying to make her see the possibilities that were open to her, now that she knew she was water. Taylor didn't think her inner shelter could be further broken down from its scrambled atomic state, but it continued getting disassembled into subatomic particles, a fact made possible by the time-based demolition of said shelter throughout all instances of its past, all the way back to its origins. "I guess that's what it must feel like when you're being erased," she thought, suddenly calm. "That which supports the structure of your life does not and has never existed." "Where are you going?" her guide asked, concerned by her dispirited stare. She looked poised and situation appropriate, but there was no light behind her eyes, as if she wasn't there anymore. "To finish my homework assignments. I assume those are still pertinent to my life," she replied, emotionless. "You really shouldn't be alone right now. Can you work on them here for a while? Or maybe call Christine, ask her to spend the evening together?" "What a lovely thought," Taylor brooded sarcastically. "I can't wait to be the third wheel on Christine and Matt's date. That would certainly make me feel better." "Or call your mother, maybe? Talk to her?" he suggested, grasping at straws. The last comment finally got Taylor to snap. She was outraged. What was the benefit of conversing with somebody who could read minds if they didn't even bother to retrieve the basic details of her history? She wasn't in the mood for hollow talk and didn't need another sanctimonious stranger to make half-baked assumptions about her life. "You know, since you spend most of your time poking around in people's heads, I expect you to pay the modicum of attention which would have informed you about my mother's limited availability. She will not answer her phone unless something about the current situation meets the description of life-threatening emergency. Being admitted to the ER might do the deed, but I trust we are not going to do that," she pinned him down with a grisly stare, trying to confirm the validity of her last statement. He nodded, just to maintain whatever emotional stability was still there. After that, Taylor turned around and left, trying to calm herself down by wandering around the library for a while, surprised to find nooks and crannies she'd never paid attention to before, and intent on bouncing back any passing thought or emotion which tried to approach her mind. She didn't want to have them anymore, knowing they would be floating out there for the world to see, like underwear hung out to dry in public. As it turns out, the yoga novices were right. Not thinking was hard, especially when one was upset, like she was now. "There is no place for me to be at peace anymore," she realized. "This is my world now, a rickety box with a broken lock in the middle of the square." On her way back to the dorm, she ran into Christine and Matt, who were so involved in their own lives, they wouldn't have noticed a change if she dyed her hair green and started wearing a clown costume. Christine chirped excitedly as she gave Taylor the latest news of her life, in painstaking detail, despite Matt's obvious embarrassment. The latter was trying to hide it by scrubbing his shoe to remove a non-existent water spot. "I'm an idiot." Taylor's breakthrough dropped inside her mind like the proverbial coin. "Nobody really cares what I think. Even if I wanted to share my thoughts with my friend, she wouldn't remember what I said by the end of the phrase. It's all Christine and Matt's show now, everything else is decor." The thought provided her with the surprise breeze of comfort she thought she was never going to feel again, so she smiled as she said goodbye to her friends and walked back to the dorm to finish her homework in the room with the broken lock. It seems the time Taylor had spent at the locksmith shop to find her invoice for the repair hadn't made any difference in the waiting time. "I really hope you're feeling better," a familiar voice spoke tentatively. "Of course. Why not?" Taylor turned around from her desk. "I'm fine. I didn't know you were enrolled in human evolutionary biology." "I'm not. I thought I heard the bell. The class isn't over?" he asked, pointing back to a generic region of space from which the bell sound supposedly originated. "I just stopped by to make sure you're back to your old self again. We've got one more door to go through." "You can't seriously expect me to go through another door again," Taylor protested. "Remember Sydney? It's either a control jump or we take our chances on a random portal. What is it with everybody that they show such dedication to meddling into my life? How about no, I don't want to go." "Random jump it is, then," he sighed, anticipating hassle. "Not that I don't celebrate the assertiveness involved in saying no to things you don't want in your life, but this is really not the time." "I wonder when I ever heard that," she mocked. "Oh, yes. Every day?" "Well, you should have tried it on one of those other days, because this particular circumstance doesn't give you that option," he replied. "You know what? I'll make my own options from now on. How about that? She said, very sure of herself, as she walked towards the door. That is really great news. I'm thrilled you finally arrived to this conclusion, which is very healthy, emotionally speaking. However, door number 7 is a non-negotiable. There is no such thing. Everything is negotiable. She reveled in her newfound individuality. Not door number 7. He insisted. I don't understand. What have I done to you to deserve to have my life turned upside down like this? She deplored theatrically. Since she'd lost her inner shelter, she rejected any sense of obligation to keep unpleasant emotions to herself. Not only that, but she exaggerated them, just to see the reaction they got. Her guy didn't blink, he just leaned back a little, to get some perspective on the performance. Upside down depends on your system of reference. If there is nothing else in your world but one object, in our case, your life, how would you know which way was up? You'd have nothing to compare it to. I was, in fact, turning your life upside up. And I must believe what you say because, she continued sassing. This day gets better every minute? That's great. Do you challenge assumptions? You really don't have to believe anything I or anybody else says. I have no way of proving it to you, I just hope you'll get to know it for yourself one day, and then maybe you'll be okay with being a lake again. Oh, good grief, not that one. Taylor thought, mortified with embarrassment. I can almost hear the harpsichord and see white doves circling my head. I do believe they were pelicans, judging by their size, he corrected her. Nothing escapes you. Taylor couldn't help her trademark sarcasm. So, when do you think you'll be up to going through door number 7? He returned to the purpose of his visit. Later, Taylor replied. Well, it's next week, actually, I just wanted to give you the heads up. Why do you even bother to ask? If there is no real choice, why pretend there is? She blew her top. For morale, he replied, very seriously. She walked quietly for a while. So, is there any preparation involved this time? Taylor's practical nature tried to anticipate any potential drama associated with whatever La La Land or number 7 opened to. Oh, no. There's no need, he dismissed the question. If you're not ready by the time you get to it, there wouldn't be any point anyway. Why don't you focus on your studies, pass all your midterms, return your library books, that sort of thing, so you're not distracted? You just stopped short of telling me to get my affairs in order. I'm not eyeing, am I? She worried. Why would you say something like that? He retorted. Every time I go through one of these doors, she started and then changed her mind. It doesn't matter. How is Christine? You guys are still friends? He asked. Of course we are. Why are you asking? Taylor got suspicious about his sudden interest in her social life. No reason, you don't seem to hang out together as much lately. She seemed to be such a good friend to you. It's not that we don't get along, she spends almost all of her time with Matt these days, I barely see her anymore. Taylor answered. We're enrolled in different classes too, she decided to change her major, she has a very busy life now. Taylor thought, not without a tinge of bitterness, that while everybody else was out there, living, she was waiting for doors to open into goodness knows where. You can live whatever life you choose, you know. If you want your life to be more like Christine's, the only thing you need to do is live it that way. Like that's going to work, after taking a trip back in time, circa 1970. Normal had given up the ghost a long time ago, and Willy Wonka himself couldn't bring it back. Like it is, then. Her guide summed up the conversation, excused himself and left. He had other engagements. Taylor walked past the library, where she could almost see the Bradford wing in her mind's eye. This reminded her she had an additional option available. She could go there, she thought. The door was still open to her alternate life, and she had plausible motivation to consider the option, but not the slightest desire to do so. She didn't know what it was about that life that put her off, so maybe the social expectation to become a Jessica, or maybe it was the thought that she would be settling for less, that she would be exchanging her dream for a slightly more expensive pair of shoes. The funny detail about her alternate life of privilege was it was only made possible by the existence of a door inside her current reality, and it was arrived at by means that emptied all of its perks of their meaning. There was nothing in that life she couldn't envision in less than 5 minutes, and none of it sounded exciting. So, door number three out of the picture, she concentrated on the schedule for the following week.